Did you know there's an online cannabis company that ships federally legal THC right to your door? And they found a way to combine THC with carefully selected functional ingredients to create gummies, baked goods, and flower for whatever type of buzz you'd want. I'm talking about Mood.com. They have an incredible line of cannabis gummies, and you get 20% off your first order at Mood.com with promo code SPECIALISTS with an S on the end. This isn't some rinky-dink discount of 5 or 10%. This is 20% off your first order. Forget one-size-fits-all supplements that only get you high. Mood's functional gummies are optimized to kick in as little as 15 minutes and take you to the mood you're looking for. My favorite are the Sleepy Time Advanced gummies. That's right, those are for sleepy time. You know when you just can't fall asleep? Take these and they'll put you right in the mood. Beyond gummies, Mood also has a selection of flower, pre-rolls, bakery treats, and beverages. Listen, you can find gummies to just get you high pretty much everywhere these days. But Mood's functional gummies combine premium, federally legal THC with targeted botanicals to help you get into the perfect mood, usually in as little as 15 minutes. And everything ships discreetly right to your door. No dispensary lines, no awkward conversations, just better days and nights delivered to your doorstep. Best of all, not only is every Mood product backed by a 100-day satisfaction guarantee, but as I mentioned, listeners get 20% off their first order with promo code SPECIALISTS with an S on the end. So head to Mood.com, find the functional gummy that matches exactly what you're looking for, and let Mood help you discover your perfect mood. And don't forget to use promo code SPECIALISTS when you check out to save 20% on your first order. Try it today at mood.com.
If you felt stuck trying to lose weight, you're not alone. Enter Weight Loss by Hers. It's designed to support you in reaching your goals. And Hers now offers access to an affordable range of FDA-approved GLP-1 medications, including the Wegovy pill and the Wegovy pen. With Wegovy at Hers, lose up to 20% or more of your body weight when combined with diet and exercise. It helps you regulate your appetite, eat less, and keep weight off. Plus, Wegovy is the first GLP-1 available in a pill, so there are no needles needed. Everything is 100% online through Hers. You'll connect with a licensed provider who will determine if treatment is right for you. If prescribed, your medication is delivered right to your door. No insurance necessary. And it doesn't stop there. Weight Loss by Hers goes beyond medication by offering access to 24/7 messaging with your care team and tons of in-app lifestyle and nutrition tips like recipes, meal plans, fitness videos, sleep content, and more. Even better, with a range of affordable GLP-1 options, Hers makes it simple to find an approach that fits your needs and your budget, if eligible. You'll get a treatment plan personalized to you and unlimited dosage changes as needed. It's weight loss designed to work with your life. Ready to reach your goals? Visit forhers.com/women to get personalized, affordable care that gets you. That's forhers.com/women. forhers.com/women. Weight loss by Hers is not available in all 50 states. Wegovy is the registered trademark of Novo Nordisk AS. To get started and learn more, including important safety information, Wegovy clinical study information, and restrictions, visit forhers.com.
Survivor Specialist Phil and Bradley are back. I'm not doing the fill-in thing this year. I'm going to call you a Survivor Specialist, Bradley. So congratulations. This is probably your biggest achievement in the Survivor community is becoming a Survivor Specialist for the week.
Thank you. I'm excited to be here.
Yeah, so with Alexa being still on her little hiatus here where she's at the Braves game for work, me and Bradley are going to be the ones who take over and take you through our predictions and power rankings for episode 3. Alexa did not turn in power rankings, so what Bradley says will be what Alexa gets. I'm sure she'll probably tweet something out at some point, but I think this is even funnier because Alexa did terrible last week, having Jessica in the 8th spot, so I already have a 12-8 lead over her. So Bradley, you don't really have too big of shoes to fill, but you are doing the Gordon Holmes power rankings, and I haven't checked, but did you beat him last week or did you lose to him?
I did beat him last week. I think I had Jessica 12 or 13, and he maybe had her 8 or 9, so similar to you and Alexa.
Yeah, were you surprised by Jessica going home when she did? Because she had a really good first episode.
I was surprised that she went home so quickly. It seems like there's a couple other people that are slightly more obvious to get rid of, but I think it's a continuing trend. Being a super fan in this era of Survivor is not a good thing at all, unless you can hide it. I just don't. I think she probably came out and she was too transparent about knowing too much. I've met Jessica a couple times in real life, and she's definitely a super fan and knows the game a lot, loves to talk about the game, and that's probably what ended up biting her.
Yeah, and it was kind of crazy because I don't even feel like what she said to Gabby was super arrogant. Like, I felt like the way that she approached it wasn't as bad as Gabby took it. But you also have to understand who you're talking to, and you have to, by that point, you should be able to figure out if Gabby's playing more emotionally or not. So I still think Jessica, I would have liked to see Jessica last a little bit longer. I was really surprised she went home second. I would have never thought that after that first week, after everything we heard from her as Pat was being medevaced out, I would have never thought that she was the one who was going to go home. But, you know, we're still left with a huge, or a really good group left in this game. And what are you thinking so far about this cast and about just everybody in general, this theme? What do you think about this season?
First of all, I like the cast. I think a lot of that most likely has to do with the fact everyone's getting a fairly even edit. We're getting to know people, because you look back on, I mean, a lot of other seasons, and there's so many people you just never knew anything about. And so I'm not sure if the cast itself is as compelling in real life as it seems like on TV, but this is a TV show and it doesn't matter what they are like in real life. I think they're all coming across great. I don't think there's too many people that are truly boring or uninteresting, which is a good place to have it. And it makes the power rankings fun, because when the edit is really lopsided, it's kind of like, well, okay, this person's silent, so, you know, how deep are they actually going to go, or are they going to win? And, you know, when everybody's getting a confessional and everybody is kind of contributing and showing up on the episodes, it makes the viewing more fun, the ranking more fun. It's all more fun to watch. It's a good time.
Yeah, I think Allison was the only one who was invisible last week, but even she had a moment where she came and spoke to, I think it was Mike laying on his back or something, but she still got to like get her airtime, where at least she said something. So even though she didn't get a confessional, she at least was there in the episode. And I think that's something that they did really well for 19 people. Normally, this is the episode where the premiere, we see everybody, and then the second episode, they cut out about 9 people. I think they did it in your season. They do it all the time, where that second episode, it's just so easy to say, okay, we're going to mainly focus on the one or two people on the winning tribe. The one or two people on the winning tribe, and then everybody on the losing tribe will get some airtime, but there'll be one or two people who don't get anything. I think this was probably one of the best edited second episodes in a really long time.
Yeah, I thought it was great. I mean, I will say I'm falling for the editor's trick in that they want you to like the Davids better, because as I do my power rankings, I always rank the David tribe first. And it's like, wow, these people are interesting. I have opinions about them. And then you get to the Goliaths and you're like, either I can't stand them or they're just meh. Or then you have Natalie, who's fantastic, who I think is really, really great TV. I think it's all good. It's a good bounce back. And I don't know if personally I'm enjoying it more just because I'm not on it and I didn't play with the people that are on it. So it's kind of, I get to be a fan again, which I haven't been able to do for a long time. You know, it's good. All's good in Survivor Land.
And you still get to keep your face in the Survivor community by having the power rankings with Gordon. And then you show up week 3 and you're here. So, you know, at least like 1,000 people are going to see you here. That's always a good thing, right?
There you go.
But yeah, so I just wanted to point out too that in the fantasy games, the MVP from last week was Elizabeth. The LVP was Dan. I'm sure you'll say a lot about Dan on this podcast, but I just wanted to say Vaughn has 37, Alexa has 37, I have 33, Bradley's got 36 points. So Bradley's beating me. I picked Jessica and Pat instead of picking B and Alec, and I definitely should have just picked B and Alec and giving you Jessica and Pat. So I'm sitting over here with 4 people. My team is starting to look like it's about to be the size of Bradley's team. And after next week, you could have a pretty firm lead on me, because I don't have that many points left to get, you know?
Yeah, I can't say my team are my 2 favorite people, but they're still here, so I guess that's good.
Yeah, I'm excited to see what you say about these people as we start getting into it. So far, it's been nicey-nice, and I don't like that.
Well, the problem is when you're doing the pregame stuff, it's content that the people actually are putting out themselves, right? There's not a producer in the editing room that's chopping up and making people characters, because I think that's what you see. Once you see them on TV, they're characters. They're not real people, but in their pregame press, they're all real people. This is what they're saying about themselves. And so I try to walk that fine line where it's like, okay, this is a real person, and so I'm going to be nicer. But then once they're made into a character on TV, it's open season.
There you go. All right. Well, now that they've been made into characters, I'm ready to get going here. So okay. you got to bring Alexa back from the dead. 12-8 deficit here.
Okay.
I'll start mine off because I had this guy at number one last week, and I'm having him there again this week. The George Bushy Atushi. I got Johnny Mundo at one. I just don't see any way that he goes home. He seems like the girls think that they have him on their side, and then he's going and talking to Natalie. And I think there's a reason they're showing us him talking to Natalie. I think Johnny Mundo is for sure hitting the merge. I think Johnny Mundo's got a really good chance to actually go deep because he's building up alliances within alliances, which is what I talked about a lot with Christian last week and Gabby. But Johnny Mundo looks like he's really starting to make some alliances with some people, and he's definitely not. I think who said it? Angelina said that Johnny Mundo was like her definite guy that she has, and there's just no way that's true. So I'm putting Johnny at one.
Okay, I don't have him at one. I've got him down at 13. I agree with you. There's a reason they showed him interacting with Natalie. But I don't know if that's positive right now. I think being associated with Natalie is probably about the worst thing that can happen to you on the Goliath tribe. But I feel like his interaction with Natalie was a little different than Jeremy's, right? With Jeremy, he was like, oh, I'm going to try to help Natalie. Mm-hmm. And it backfired. And so I think he can go to the rest of the tribe and be like, whoa, I got burnt by her too. She's crazy. Where with John, he was more like, hey, I'm trying to help you out because I'm working with you. Mm-hmm. And then she kind of went nuts on her own alliance. So it just, I felt like there was a difference in their interactions, which maybe it's not a total positive, but I also tend to agree. I don't think he's going anywhere. I think, especially on the Goliath tribe, if they end up going to tribal council, it's pretty straightforward as to who's in trouble and who's not. And I don't think John's in trouble.
Yeah, it's going to be interesting to see how the idol thing plays out this week, because it looks like Jeremy's telling people and it looks like Natalie might catch wind of it. And once, if Natalie knows, she's definitely going to blow it up. And I think somebody's calling Dan out in the preview. I haven't watched the preview again since Wednesday, so I forget. But it's going to be interesting to see if they then try to get Dan, or if they then try to go after somebody in his alliance to weaken Dan. Because once you know somebody has an idol that early, you know, that's always dangerous. I mean, I just don't know how I feel about the Goliaths ever losing. Like, do you honestly think the Goliaths are going to lose a challenge here? Or do you think this could very much go the way your season probably would have gone with Navidi and Malolo, where Malolo would have just kept losing? Because once you lose once, it's just never ending.
Yeah, I think right around day six, though, from a player standpoint, the challenges change a little bit. In the first two episodes, the challenges are a lot more difficult in terms of strength, and that's more of an asset. And right around day six, you start to see a shift where it's a little bit more strategy or a little bit more luck, the puzzles, you know, a bigger part of the challenge or something along those lines where it doesn't take that brute force strength. So I think it's possible that the Davids turn it around.
Okay. And win. Yeah. What did you think about that puzzle last week? The one that took over an hour for everybody.
It was really cool. I think it would be fun to do. It's an interesting concept having to balance it. I liked it a lot. I have some ideas of how I think you could do it. It'd be curious to know if it was like the one where you stack it up, everyone's holding the rope and you stack it up and it spells immunity, to where you could drop the inside ropes more because the other side is being balanced. So I think there was probably a strategy as to which pieces to put in first and last. And yeah, it's a good puzzle.
Yeah, I think the mistake everybody made, because I watched the episode a second time, I think the mistake everybody made is that they were trying to build their own section up instead of building across the bottom first. And once you had the bottom in place, they all kind of worked together. Like you said, you really only had to worry about the outside.
Yes. I think it would stabilize the puzzle a lot if you had a foundation across all the things, but
yeah, I don't know. I just hate when the puzzles take over an hour. Cause I'm like, well, what was the point of everything before this? So
there's never a point for anything before that.
I know.
That's my biggest complaint, and I'm pretty good at puzzles. So it's totally fine from a player standpoint. I think it's great, but it's kind of this idea of like, well, we're going to canoe out and get some puzzle pieces. We're going to carry a chest full of puzzle pieces, and then we're going to do a puzzle, and that's what determines all of it.
Yeah.
I think that's kind of stale at this point.
Yeah, I agree. I mean, B sucked at that part of the challenge. She was so behind Alec, and at the end of it, like, they could have easily won that challenge.
Right. Yep.
All right. Well, who do you got at one? Now that you put up some spoilers here and told us you have Mundo at 13, who do you have at
one? Oh, yeah, sorry. Well, not following the rules here.
What is going on, man?
Hang on. Whoa. I'm having technical difficulties with my list. Okay, so I have Christian in first. Okay. I don't see how he in any way is in trouble next week. If they end up going to tribal council, he has Gabby, he has Nick. I would assume he has Lyrsa and Elizabeth, and I think he's in a good spot. I think he's fascinating to watch on TV. One thing I do think is kind of interesting is he's so compelling and so animated that I wonder if the other contestants are going to start to catch on of like, hey, the producers really like this guy, mm-hmm. and he seems really good at Survivor, and he's going to eat up all our airtime, which is definitely something that people on the beach talk about. You're like, yo, you know, it's like you look at Chris Noble and you're like, well, are any of us going to be on TV if Chris Noble's doing his shenanigans over there in the corner the whole time? So I wonder if people will start to pick up on that and he'll become a threat in that way. But I don't see how he goes home. Even if Davey were to play his idol, I feel like they target somebody else. They don't target Christian.
Well, I feel like at this point they still target one of the weaker people, or maybe Elizabeth, because I feel like they feel probably they can probably tell that Lyrsa and Elizabeth are tight, and maybe that's how it started. And like I was saying last week's recap, I feel like the Christian not being on their side hurts, because you want to play with Christian. I think everybody likes Christian, but I don't think that they're like necessarily hurt by the fact that Elizabeth was against them or anything like that. I think they expected Elizabeth to be against them because they didn't look shocked when the second vote came up. So I think they know that like Elizabeth and Lyrsa are together. And I think that Christian's in the five-person alliance, and like I keep saying, he's in the three-person alliance within the five-person alliance. He's in the two-person alliance within the three-person alliance. He's in the best spot. I have him at three. I don't, you know, okay. I mean, I can't really argue with him. Putting him at one. I just have Davey at two because he has an idol. So I put Mundo, Davey, Christian. Those are my top three.
Okay.
I love Davey with the idol, and I think Davey has just been so positive. I feel like Davey's somebody who's going to fall just short, and it's going to be a bummer, but I feel like he's going to be able to navigate his way through this time where he's not on the right side of the numbers, but he has an idol and he's the most likable out of the three that are on the wrong side of the numbers right now.
Yeah. Oh, he's definitely the most likable. I think he's also the one that has the highest possibility of fitting in with the core group. Mm-hmm. You just look at how the people are. I see, you know, Carl and B having a harder time breaking into that group just in terms of who they like hanging out with, who you want to spend time with on the beach. It seems like Davey's a more natural fit for that bunch anyway. Yeah. And you add that in with an idol. Yeah, I agree with you.
Yeah. He's like, now they're showing him as a provider. Like, since when does Survivor show people being providers? And I feel like if they're going to play this up, it's got to have something going on, right? Like Davey's got to be around for a little bit. They never play this character up ever.
Yeah, what's interesting is they're playing up that he's a provider, and then they're also playing up that he's playing the game. You know, he's finding an idol, and he's being strategic, and I feel like those two are generally mutually exclusive on Survivor.
And he almost ate a flower.
Yeah.
All right, man, so who you got? You can go 2-3, you can go 2-3-4, you know, you just...
Okay, sounds good. So I have Gabby in second. Again, I think she came across, at least in the episode, where she was kind of second behind Christian. So if they're going to go for the top, I think they're going to go for Christian. And if they're not going to go for the top, I think they skip over Gabby in the pecking order of their alliance, mm-hmm. and try to go for a Lyrsa or an Elizabeth or somebody, or Nick potentially. But I think Gabby kind of flying under Christian's wing is a safe spot for her to be right now in terms of her winning the game. I don't think it's real great when you're, you know, kind of begging someone like, take care of me because I don't know what to do. But I think the duo of Gabby and Christian make compelling Survivor television. And they're fun to watch play together. So, I have her in second, and then I have Kara in third, because I think, kind of switching over to the dynamics of the Goliaths, you've got Kara and Angelina and Natalia, and the three girls, but then you also have Kara, who was shown talking to Alec, I think. And then she's been, around Dan a bunch. And so I think that you kind of play all of those connections off of each other. She's in a pretty good spot. And I think she's done a good job of making it clear to everyone that she's playing Dan. She's not in a power couple with Dan, which is an important distinction for her game. And so I think she's in the best spot of any of the Goliaths.
Well, and it's funny because when you rewatch the episode, or if you're watching with Jeremy in the water, I think he's the one who says, Dan is in a showman's, Kara's playing Dan or something. Yeah. Like he says something along those lines where yep. they're all very aware of it. And I agree. I actually have Gabby at 4 and Kara at 5. So okay. I just had Johnny, Mundo, and Davey ahead of them because Johnny's just so big and because Davey has the idol. But I think that Gabby, yeah, I think you make a great point with Gabby where she's got Christian as her shield. And the way you, like what you just said, people are talking about screen time. I don't think people are worried that Gabby's going to get more screen time than them. If that actually were to be a thing. And I think that they're probably more worried about Christian being a better player than Gabby. B is probably more hurt by Gabby than she is by Christian because she thought that they were all working together. But right now I feel like B is just a sitting duck. So I don't think she has a chance. And then the thing with Kara, I think, you know, I was really hard on Kara beforehand because of the TMZ content and realizing that that was all Alex's fault, but that's all I had to go on. So I kept saying, no, Kara, no, Kara, no, Kara. Kara right now is playing fantastic. She is convincing the girls she's with them. She's convinced Dan she's with him. And I don't think anybody else, they might see her going around doing that, but I don't think anybody's seeing her as that threatening. And I think she's very threatening in this game.
Yeah, I would agree with you on that. I think I would love to know exactly how much input she had on the TMZ stuff, which is not related to the power rankings at all. But yeah, I'm curious. It's hard to rank people and it's hard to talk about the season and not know that at some point you have to expect Alec and Kara to get together. Yeah. It's kind of a sad spoiler that we all have because you assume it's coming or Alec is just going to disappear and which makes it a little trickier, but yeah, I think she's doing a good job. She has surprised me because I was not keen on her at all at the beginning, just going into pregame, regardless of knowing about the TMZ stuff, just her pregame content was very meh. NFL cheerleader, now she does real estate. It just, I don't know, there was nothing that compelling about her, but she's making a good Survivor character.
Yeah, so I didn't think she was going to be self-aware. That's really what it came down to. No. I thought that she was going to be kind of like Natalie. You can see she has all this money. She has her life in order. And so she's not self-aware on the show because nobody's ever told her, like, Natalie, what you're doing is annoying or awful or whatever. And Kara, I thought that she could have kind of fallen into that same trap. And I'm surprised how aware she is right now.
Yeah. Yeah.
I think she's safe for a while. I actually had her as one of my top five people who has a chance to win the game after last week's episode. I thought that for sure she's really in the running right now. Might be the only person on Goliath who can win.
That's probably true at this point. I think Jeremy could possibly, but again, yeah, I tend to agree with you. I think that's the hard part is you have a tribe. I think most of the Davids are so likable, at least in the way they're being edited, and the Goliaths are so unlikable that you have to assume a David's going to end up winning.
Yeah.
Just because, you know, it's kind of like if you're going to slam someone in the edit, a la Bradley, you know, that person's obviously never going to win. That's apparent from the first thing that came out of my mouth. And I think it's apparent for most of the people in the Goliath tribe. You're just like, I'm sorry. There's just no way. You can be a really great character, somebody we can root against that it's kind of awful. But in an entertaining way, but you can't make it to the end and win.
Yeah. And it's the same thing as even with heroes versus villains, even though you knew that the villains could only win if they got to the end with all villains and you started to see that taking shape and there was no way it was going to stop. You also got to a point where you knew that there were only like two villains who could win. It was Jerry or it was Sandra. Because if you watch that whole season, maybe the first time you watch it, you're like, oh, maybe Parvati can pull it out. But when you rewatch it, you realize nobody liked Parvati. And Parvati had to cut off Amanda, and that hurt her. And then Amanda could go to the jury and talk about whatever she wanted to talk about. So even on a season like that where it's clear that here's your heroes, here's your villains, it doesn't get any more basic than that. You know the villains aren't going to win unless they go to the end together. There's still only two people who can win out of that whole group. Like Danielle was never going to win, Russell was never going to win, Parvati was never going to win.
Yep.
So I look at this is the same thing with the Goliaths. If it starts to get to the end and we're down to 10 people and six are Goliaths, it could become kind of a dud at that point because you're looking at the Goliaths and knowing, okay, there's only one or two people who could even win from that team. And they're picking off the Davids one by one, who we all like much more.
Yep.
Yeah. That's my two cents on that. All right. So what do you got? So you did your three. Who do you got at 4 and 5 then?
I'm Jeremy at 4 and Davey at 5. So I put Jeremy up there because I think he had a pretty good episode. He got a lot of content. He was shown to be pretty aware of what was going on. He seems to be able to read people pretty well, even if, I guess you could say maybe he misread Natalie in terms of he thought maybe he could convince her to be normal and try to get along with everybody. But something tells me that's not why Natalie was put on the season, and Natalie knows that's not why she was put on the season, to get along with people. And so I thought it was interesting that he was trying to get her to come around, even if it didn't work. It showed that, you know, he was willing to take a chance on it and willing to try it, and he's working. So I kind of see him and as second to Kara as possibly someone that can go far and be likable from the Goliath tribe.
Yeah, I hear what you're saying with Jeremy. I have him a little bit lower. I feel like we got to see a lot of Jeremy this week, but I still don't know how everybody on that tribe feels about Jeremy. You know what I mean? And now he seems like, I'm going to really go after Natalie. And then we have John saying he's going to try to work with Natalie. What's going to end up winning out in the situation? Plus, if you find out that there's an alliance of six on that side and they have an idol, or an alliance of five even, and they have an idol, that makes them more powerful than your alliance of five. Are you really going to be going all out against Natalie, who keeps on? I think her argument of, I'm the 60-year-old woman, why would I be the biggest threat? I think that's still such a great point.
Yeah. No, and we don't know. And then the other thing is, they haven't been to tribal, so you don't actually – they don't even at this point know where they all sit in terms of who's going to end up voting for, you know, with each other and what's going to happen. You don't know until you get there for the first time and you test those alliances. And the other thing going against Jeremy, I guess, is also that, you know, Mike seems to be his closest person, which is probably not the best move he could be making right now.
No, I totally agree. Yeah. And how are you feeling about Mike going forward? Because we all know that he's the celebrity coming into the season, but how do you feel about his chances on this season?
Terrible.
Yeah.
I'm not a fan of him. I mean, I gotta say, as much as I love the show and everything, that goes without saying, this archetype that Mike is the most tired, obnoxious, overused male archetype on Survivor. And it just, I'm so done with it. Find somebody else from Hollywood that isn't this self-deprecating, I'm terrible, but I write screenplays that make millions of dollars kind of shtick. It's just, it's so just overdone. And I can see why it shows up constantly, right? Because casting and Jeff and everybody lives in LA, and this is definitely an archetype. You see them at the coffee shop everywhere you go. Mm-hmm. You know, it's this person who's like, I wasn't cool, so I moved from the East Coast to West Coast, and I'm going to be in the movies because, you know, I couldn't beat the popular kids at being an investment banker. And so this is totally a person that you see out here in LA. But I think for the rest of the country, it's just kind of like, for real, we're going to get another rich person that feels like they're not cool. It just, I don't know. I don't like it. It's just squirrely.
And as somebody who did do that move and hasn't written School of Rock or Nacho Libre, why not put me on the show? You know what I mean? Like put somebody who's not successful on the show and made that move with that goal in mind, but didn't be successful at it. Because what you're saying right now, it's like when Mike or even when David, and I love David, and you know, you, from what you said, I don't know if you love David, but I love David. But I do think it's really hard to sit here and feel completely bad for this guy when you know that he writes for Family Guy. You know, like he's very successful. So yeah, he might be going through some stuff, but there's other people who could probably play that type better because they actually are even more unsuccessful. And that could be like a different area of that archetype. But I do think that Mike right now, he gives good confessionals, and that's another reason, you know, he's going to give good confessionals too.
Yeah.
So what do you have to say about those
good confessionals in this very overdone way? They're the same flavor. It's just the problem I have with that is that person, that character has been on Survivor so many times. They give the same confessional, same kind of confessionals. They're a little witty. They have good analogies. You know, I don't know. I'm kind of tired of it at this point. I really wonder, I would love to know, and I don't, was Mike like an, oh shit, we have a spot and we need to fill somebody? Because we all know he's Jeff's friend. Mm-hmm. Which I can't imagine not being a weird dynamic, possibly a conflict of interest. Mm-hmm. It's bizarre. I don't know. I'm not enjoying him a ton just because it feels like a tired charade.
Yeah. I hear what you're saying too.
I will say, okay. So on the show, I mean, like I enjoyed David enough when he was on Millennials Gen X, David in real life is different, and he's a lot of fun to hang out with. So there's no reason for me to think that Mike's not the exact same way. Of, you know, because at the end of the day, they're kind of, for some reason, they love to just slide you into the spot they've decided you fit into, and they just edit you the same way they've edited everybody else who's been on the show, you know, before you in that slot. And so who knows, is Mike in real life exactly what we're seeing on TV, or is this just kind of the struggling Hollywood writer that's not cool slot that they're kind of pushing him into? I don't know. You know, so it's definitely not a personal thing against Mike, unless I hang out with him and he's awful. But you know, for now, it's just kind of like, did we need to see this again? Like, can we go back to the 45-year-old bartending like woman? That's a great archetype that we don't get anymore that often, that we used to in like old school Survivor, and instead now we just get the...
Who was your favorite of those?
Like, oh God. Well, they all kind of look the same, and I feel like they all did the exact same placement. They were all like roughly eighth place, right?
Okay.
So no one's hitting me.
Okay. But yeah, no, I hear what you're saying. I get it. And it is weird when you know that it's somebody Jeff is friends with. It is weird because everybody knows that. And it is strange to see that then on TV, because, you know, I don't think that there's any, like, I'm not saying that there's like, what do you call it? Production interference with that, but it's weird. Like, it is strange.
No, I don't think there's production interference, but I guarantee you there's a certain red line in the editing room of like, we are not going to make this person look like a fool, which would be amazing as a Survivor player, right? It would be so liberating. You'd be like, I can do whatever the fuck I want because, you know, Jeff's not going to make me look that awful. But again, I don't know. You know, it's all just kind of frustrating.
Yeah.
Not a big Mike fan.
All right. Well, fair enough. My number six, I have Elizabeth, the overwhelming MVP of last week, who I have heard this high because I do think that they're gunning for B. And I think that if the other side has their way, they're going to gun for Lyrsa because they want their, like, if they lose again, you have to get rid of one of the weakest people on your tribe. You have to, because otherwise you are just going to fall apart until, like, if they aren't swapping, and we haven't seen a preview if they're swapping or not, have we?
I don't think they're swapping.
I don't think they're swapping. So if they're not swapping and you lose, and now you're down 10-7, and that starts to get a little scary because then it could be 10-6, and you know that the other tribe isn't going to tribal and all that, but they could easily ride it out until final 10. Like, they could just do it at that point. So I think that you say to yourself, okay, we need to get rid of one of the weakest people. And I think that out of that, of the three people in the minority on that tribe, the one that nobody feels they can work with is B. I feel like she's the one that, you know, she had her little speech at the, after the last tribal, or after the last immunity challenge, which was whatever. And Carl looks like he's beat down, but I don't think they're going to vote Carl out just yet. They're not going to get rid of Davey. And if somehow that side were to be able to pull people in, it'd be able to pull people in to get rid of Lyrsa. So I think Elizabeth's in a completely fine spot right now, but I'm curious to see if she starts to feel a little too good about herself in this power position now.
Yeah, I think she's in a good spot because she's not at the top of the alliance in the majority, which is a pretty safe place to be right now, pre-swap. You know, you can say that Christian and Gabby are making the decisions, so you're not upsetting people as much. But I also think she did a really great job maneuvering around and getting the target off of Lyrsa. I don't know how much it was. I mean, Elizabeth got most of the credit, I think, in the edit for getting the target off of Lyrsa. I think she did a good job. I think she's fascinating, too.
She's great. Yeah. Elizabeth is really fun TV. And I feel like they finally have nailed down the female version of so many male archetypes we see on the show. Like, they finally nailed down on the Elizabeth, like, this Elizabeth character.
Yeah, no, she's great. She's super upbeat. She's fun. I think I said last week in my power rankings, like, her secret weapon was that she had her hat to keep her dry, which I would have killed for that hat. I probably would have put it in the fire. Cause it's like, you're going to stand there and stay dry. And
yeah,
everyone else is soaked. I mean, that's
brilliant. That's a good idea.
I gave it to her.
Yeah, that's good. Lucky.
Yeah. I had her at eighth.
You've heard eight. Okay. Who do you have at six? So
before that, I had Natalia at six. I think she's been perfectly unexciting. You know, she doesn't appear to be doing anything wrong at the moment. She doesn't seem too overconfident. She's with the girls. Then she also says she's with John. So I think she's not in any danger of going home. this week. I think she's perfectly unexceptional.
I have her so much further down than you.
Okay. And then I have Angelina at 7, which pains me because I'm not an Angelina fan. But I, again, for the same reason that I think Natalia's okay, I think Angelina's okay. She seems to be in with enough people that something would have to go really wrong for her, or she'd have to be on the wrong side of an idol to be in any danger right at the moment.
Yeah, I hear what you're saying with that. I just fear with Natalia, they've shown her being so at Natalie's throat that if there's going to be somebody Natalie might try to go after, and it can't be Dan because he has the idol and people are going to find out that he has the idol, I think it's going to be Natalia.
Yeah.
You know, so I have her much, much lower. But my 7, I have Jeremy, you know, at the top, kind of for similar reasons to you. I don't think he's in any danger this week. Yeah. And at 8, I have Nick. I think Nick's in a much better spot now. He's got his Mason-Dixon alliance, which is the greatest alliance name of all time. Right, Bradley? You got to love that.
Yeah, I guess. No, Nick is cool. I like Nick. I like him on TV. He's cool in real life, too. The alliance names can go. This isn't Big Brother. But, yeah, he definitely saved himself. He was somebody that I think he needed a couple more days to move past the maybe not working as much around camp, but then also just the stereotype. I think it's tough to show up on that beach dressed in a, you know, jacket and khakis and dress shoes. And then immediately people are going to say, like, if there's one time you're not collecting firewood with everybody else, you're going to be like, oh, you're lazy. Look, you're wearing this jacket. Yeah. You're a public defender, even though I guarantee you half the people on that tribe have no idea what that is. They just think he's, you know, making a bunch of money like every other lawyer, which is just so not kind of true. And so I think he just needed those couple more days to get people to realize, like, hey, this is the real Nick. Because, yeah, I mean, I've spent some time with Nick, and he doesn't come across as a lazy, obnoxious, privileged person. And he's pretty fun to be around. So I think, luckily for him, Pat got hurt, and now he was able to get into a spot that he couldn't get into in the first 3 days.
Yeah, and do you think that that might have hurt him too, that people might have expected more from him because he's got that Kentucky accent where you might think to yourself, this guy should be working harder than he is? Like, and like you said, he's wearing that suit. You think that all was just adding up against him?
Yeah. Yeah, yeah. I have to think it was a lot of just the image perception. I mean, that plays in a lot. I think because you sit around these people for a week before the game starts, and you're creating a lot of opinions about people. And if you get onto the beach and someone is so dramatically different than what you kind of expected them to be, yeah, it will erase what you were thinking, and it's not going to doom them. But even if there's like one or two things out of 20 that reaffirm what you thought that first week, it's hard to dig out of that hole.
Yeah.
And I think that's just what Nick fell into. And now he's able to crawl out of it as people see, like, oh, okay, you know.
Yeah, and he's got Christian, and Christian's got Gabby. So I think they're the three person. I think that's the three of the five. I think Elizabeth and Lyrsa are in the minority of that majority alliance.
Yeah.
Yeah. So right. I like where Nick's at. I mean, did you have Nick at 9, or were you just
– I had Nick at 12.
12. So, okay. So,
I mean, it's a toss-up at that point. I have – let me see where I had him in the – yeah, I had him in 6th in the David tribe, so.
Okay.
12th overall.
Yeah, so my next – I'll do my next three, okay, and then you can kind of fill in that gap, and we already know you have Nick and John at 12 and 13. But I go Alec, Dan, Allison, and the reason I have Alec and Allison at – I have Alec at 9 and Allison at 11, and the reason I have them there is because I just haven't seen much of them.
Yeah.
And I feel like so little of the story is revolving around them that for them to go home would really surprise me.
Yeah.
Because I feel like there's other people on that tribe who have had enough story that would go home. Like Natalie would go home. Natalia could go home. I feel like Angelina could somehow go home. I put Dan at 10, even though I think he has a chance to go home. If they were to lose, he has the idol. And if he does, if he is as tight with these girls as he thinks he is, and these girls really want to keep that idol, you know, powerful in their, on their side and whatever, and they want to keep the numbers, then they'll tell him when he's going home. And I think that one of them at least will be able to catch wind of it, because there's so many of them. There's three of the girls and Dan. So I think somebody will hear about that. Maybe it's Kara. Maybe Kara's playing both sides. I don't know. But I do think that Dan will be okay the first time they go. And yeah, Alec and Allison, I just, I don't know enough. And Alec, so far, I think he's the most surprising for me that he hasn't annoyed me. Like, he really has not annoyed me at all.
Well, he also hasn't really been on our TV.
Yeah, but I figured he would have been so obnoxious by this point.
Oh, yeah. I mean, how could you not with the swoopy, greased back hair and the fact he's on the Goliath tribe, even though he's a bum? It just, it's like, wow, you grew up privileged in Orange County. We should put you on the Goliath tribe. Yeah, I had him at 11. Same kind of deal. It just, he's not running the alliance, but he seems to be in the majority alliance. Mm-hmm. If, you know, what we're seeing is accurate, if they were to go to tribal. So, I don't think he's going home. And I had Dan at 9. As well, I think same kind of thing. Kind of a side note about Dan is I think he's a great poster child for my opinion on we need to cast a whole lot less super fans and we need a whole lot more casual and non-fan contestants because he's really fun to watch, right? He's kind of bad at it. Mm-hmm. He's like, hey, I'm going to hide my idol in my pocket because or, you know, my jacket because nobody is going to assume it's there. And it's like, of course, everyone's going to check where mm-hmm. it's easiest to check first. But he just thinks, oh, they're only going to check in the tough places. So he's just not, he's not meta about the game. And it's so refreshing because I can't stand how you sit there and you're like, well, these first 100 scenarios won't work for these 25 reasons. Yeah. And let me, you know, play every scenario in my head. It's kind of fun to watch someone stumble and try things before they move on to the next one, instead of being like, no, in season 13, this didn't work. And then again, it didn't work in season 20. And, you know, it just, it makes the game a lot more fun from a viewer perspective.
Well, and what
people
I was,
like Dan. Yeah.
Yeah. And what I was going to say with Dan too, or with all of that, we've seen so many times on this season already talking about how less women find idols and like these little tidbits that if you watch earlier Survivor, not even that long ago, just a couple seasons ago, maybe, if you watch these types of seasons, you see that like people weren't talking about other seasons of Survivor. They weren't talking about what happened in the past. Maybe they would say, hey, an idol is normally hidden here, but they weren't just sitting there talking about, oh, more. I read online was Angelina's words. I read online that this, that didn't happen. And I agree. Like I am enjoying watching Dan play. I think you need a good mix just like with anything else.
Yeah.
But I do think that Dan is a lot of fun. And as much as I rip on Dan, and I'm happy he was LVP last week because he had no business being MVP week one,
I
will rip on Dan, but he's entertaining as anything. He's really fun to watch, and it's good to have somebody on his side like Kara who does understand the game and says, Dan, stop being dumb. Like that, I'm all in on that.
Yeah. No, I think he's great. I mean, put his pandering on social media and everything aside – yeah, he's really fun to watch. I just think, I don't know, there are times where it hits me, and this was exactly what it was like when we were out, you know, filming Ghost Island. Was it was almost like watching a group of people play Survivor rather than be on Survivor, if that makes sense. They're like, I'm gonna do it like this because this is what this person did, and I'm gonna do it, you know. And it's just after a while, it's like, why don't you just be you, be genuine? And instead, everyone's just trying to anticipate everything that's coming, which is good gameplay. You're playing the game, you know, that you're in, but it starts to feel like these people are not genuine survivors. They're more playing like they want to be genuine survivors.
Well, and that's what I'll ask you. Do you think Jessica goes home because everybody was assuming that there would have been a swap at 18 because they're like predicting that there's going to be a swap coming up so they can get rid of. I don't think Jessica was that strong, but she's stronger than Lyrsa was. Like when Lyrsa, I loved rewatching that episode and Lyrsa saying, I'm not the weakest, but not being able to say who was weaker than her. She could not think of anybody who was actually weaker than her. Every time she's making the argument, she's just saying, I'm not the weakest, but she's not pointing to anybody else as weaker than she is, which I thought was
fine. No, that's fair. I wonder if there was more to Jessica going home than what we saw, just in terms of they're like, oh, she thought she was a threat and go home. I mean, a lot of that, if it's raining that much and you're all sitting huddled together, like, is there something about Jessica that people just didn't gel as well? Was it just that she was young, couldn't connect with her? You know, I'm sure it was coupled with her playing, you know, a good game out the gate for sure. But I wonder how much more there was to it. I mean, frankly, it's never as simple as the edit makes it seem in real life. And a lot of it comes down to who do you like hanging out with? And so I wonder if there was a little bit of that dynamic. I don't know if there was or not. I think it's just kind of Yeah, I don't know. But on Lyrsa, it just amazes me that there's so much talk of her being the weakest person, because I mean, I'm very bullish on her. I think she's incredibly good TV. Mm-hmm. I love her as a character. And I think I'm like, I'm here for the Lyrsa goes from all this talk of weakest to the strongest and starts schooling people. And I think we're going to get it. That's just my hunch. Mm-hmm. I'm not spoiled at all. So I really genuinely have no idea. She could go home next week, but there's something that tells me, because you watched her dominate the first, that first challenge right out the gate. And, you know, we haven't seen any instance where she's hopelessly behind and doing terribly. You see Carl doing way worse than her, yeah, and you see B doing way worse than her. And so I wonder if they're playing that up, because then she's going to, you know, come around and we're going to get Lyrsa being a, I mean, she has like big survivor character that they love written all over her. Mm-hmm. And then there's also just the part that, like, yeah, she looks different from the rest of them in terms of she's got the dyed hair and, you know, she's into punk music and she comes from Puerto Rico. And I wonder how much that plays into people just being like, oh, she's the weakest, instead of staying like, oh, she sticks out like a sore thumb. You know, I don't know.
Okay. Yeah. I mean, that's totally fair. I mean, I just thought it was funny that she wasn't even trying to throw anybody else under the bus. And I'm surprised that they went after Jessica and not B, because at the beginning of that challenge, it was B who blew it. And Jessica really didn't look like she had done anything wrong. So like you said, I wonder if there is more going on behind the scenes that we just didn't see.
I mean, it could just be that B is like watching paint dry and you're like, okay, well, mm-hmm, we're not worried about her right now. You know, it's entirely possible that,
yeah,
I mean, because you do have to think, you don't, even though it makes better TV to get rid of the threats one by one, right? You have to be thinking of like, who can I play with and who do I think I can manipulate? B doesn't know anything about Survivor. She admitted that in her pregame stuff. She's not exciting from what we've seen. And here you have Jessica, she's reciting, you know, statistics about seasons and big super fan, and she's playing really hard and she's really gung-ho about being out there. You know, Jessica is just way more dangerous, even if, you know, she makes better TV and we wish she could stay.
Yeah, no, exactly. No, I agree with that. Who do you have at 10? You did 8, 9, 11, 12, 13.
I have Lyrsa at 10.
Oh, you have Lyrsa. Okay, well, so you have Lyrsa that high. So you're that confident.
She's my winner pick. I was impressed. So what I think is really important with what's happening in Lyrsa's game right now is, she was on the bottom, she should have gone home. That's what it looked like was going to happen. And with, I think, definitely a lot of Elizabeth's help, but I think Lyrsa did herself a favor. She was backed into a corner. She was going to go home, and she fought her way out of that corner and didn't end up going home. And I think these things she's learning right now about how to get out of that spot and how to not go home, she's been to tribal council now. These are really important skills to learn. And I think it's the contestants who learn them early in the game, where they can make mistakes but still survive, that when you get into day 30 and on, they're battle tested. They've been building up those skills longer than any other Goliath or anybody that has been in that position, you know? So if she can go from the underdog and she can learn how to operate in that spot, then I think when she finds herself in that position again, she's got that much more experience over maybe the other person that they're trying to target.
Yeah, and that's fair, because you saw it with Chris in your own season. He never goes to tribal council. He gets to the merge thing and he has the idol. And if he had gone to one tribal council and somehow survived it, I think Chris makes it past that merge, because he realizes what it's like to go to an actual tribal council.
You start to read into the questioning. You start to read into, I mean, maybe you read into everything too much. You know, at tribe, it's like, oh, they sat me here, I'm sitting next to this, but you know, whatever. I mean, there's a lot you can read into it, but I agree 100% with you. You don't sit there in Chris's position. Even though he has the self-awareness of like a fly, you know, you don't go to that and you start to feel different, because he immediately, had he been to tribal before, exactly, would have thought like, okay, this feels a little bit different. People aren't looking at me the same way they were last time. You know, and those are big cues. And so if Lyrsa is learning that kind of stuff right now, and she's saying that, you know, well, I thought I was on the bottom, but these people were making eye contact with me, and this is how they were interacting with Jessica, who they actually were going to vote for. All that stuff is so helpful to pick up on, that I think it really does her a service later on down the line.
Yeah, I'm still not going to buy into Lyrsa yet. I still have her lower down, just because, man, I got to see it first. You know, I have to see with this tribe falling apart the way it is, already a weaker tribe, if they lose again, I want to see her keep surviving. And she could. I mean, I'm not saying she's not my bottom person this week, but I'm just not to put her at 10. Man, you're almost putting her in the top half. I couldn't do that yet.
Yeah, I mean, I think it's just as likely that I'm, you know, chatting with Lyrsa in a couple of weeks about like, what did you like in Australia on the reject trip? You know, so I'm not by any means saying she wins. I don't know. There's something I like about her. I think she's good on TV, and I hope she sticks around long enough that she can really become a big Survivor character, because I think she's a breath of fresh air and would be a fun one to have in the, you know, upper echelon of Survivor.
Well, for your breath of fresh air, my 12 and 13 are Angelina and Mike. So there's your breath of fresh air right there, Bradley. Angelina, I have a little bit lower than you. I kind of said, I just think that she could be in danger if the other five do team up. If John does team up with, you know, Natalie and Mike, and Jeremy realizes, oh God, maybe I shouldn't try to work with the people who have an idol, and all, like, Dan just cannot stop looking at girls. So maybe I shouldn't do that. And then Mike, I think Mike had a good episode. It looks like Jeremy is now trusting him. Looks like Natalie kind of was looking out for him. We had that whole thing in the water where they were talking about how Mike wasn't their number one or number two public enemy right now. It doesn't seem like they're really scared of him at all. So I like Mike going forward. I got him at 13. I think that if they lose, there's probably – I have two people lower than him on his own tribe, but I think that there's even more people whose names could come up instead of Mike's.
Okay. Yeah. No, I tend to agree with that. I don't think he's going home. But if some idol weirdness happens, I think he's a natural person to split votes on. Or I don't know. I'm curious as to what his long-term arc is going to be. It's just I don't know how to.
Yeah, no, I
don't know exactly how to place him, because he's not being put as the underdog per se right now. You know, we haven't been given a reason to really want to root for him. But he's still getting all those confessionals of the people that usually get also other confessionals that make us want to root for them. So I don't really know what's going on with him.
He's got the weird David Wright edit. It's very similar to David's at the beginning, where David's was obviously more emotional than Mike's is. Yeah. But it's very similar in the we don't know if he's actually going to have a chance to win this or if he's going to go home early. Like, we have no idea right now.
Yeah, is he going to figure it out, or is he going to look like a fool?
Yeah, I think that's fair.
I think that's totally fair. Okay, so I think I went through 11 because I have Alec at 11. Then I have Nick at 12. Same kind of – I can just see, because the target was on him at one point a few days ago, that if something were to happen with the idol or whatever, he might somehow get the target back on him. But I don't think he's going home. Then I had John at 13. We already discussed. Then I have Allison at 14. She's kind of dropped off the map, so it's hard to know exactly where she stands, especially because they haven't been to Tribal. But at the same time, she was not sitting with Kara and Angelina and Natalia, right, when they were having a conversation about controlling the three guys. Yeah, she's not there. Why wasn't she there? Especially because in pregame, she was the one that was talking about how she wanted to create the Black Widows Alliance and all girls. And okay, so if they're creating an all women's alliance, where is she? Why is she not there? So that just makes me think she's possibly on the outside. And then she's not getting the kindest edit, in terms of she is definitely not someone we are supposed to root for.
Yeah.
And so she's not getting a lot of content. And then the content she is getting makes her look like she's out of touch, rubbing it into the Davids that the Goliaths keep winning. You know, it's just not a lot of positive stuff, which is kind of fun to watch. Yeah. It, you know, it amuses me to watch other people get completely run over by a bus like I did. But for her long-term prospects, you know, if they're trying to find someone to go with, I feel like Allison might be an easier choice than even Natalia, because if Kara's got Natalia and she thinks she can trust her, then why not give it to Allison, you know, or give the votes?
Yeah. And I think Allison's probably in with like Jeremy and David, or not Dave. I'm calling him David now. Mike. Right. I feel like that's where she probably would fall into the groupings. I don't think she would end up on the other side. I worry for her, but at the same time, what I heard about that, I think it was in one of the first one outs or whatever, but whatever it was with Allison on that mat where she was talking about how she thought she was a David, supposedly it was so much worse in real life than what we actually saw on TV. So I'm thinking that because it wasn't so bad on TV, because Pat owned her, but she wasn't owned as badly as I think it was made to be. I think it was in first one out. I forget what it was.
Okay.
But whatever it was, I said to myself, well, maybe that means she goes a little bit further, because they didn't want to just say, oh, what an idiot right off the bat. And then she ends up going home, right? Like, you know, and then she ends up going to final seven.
Yeah, I mean, she still looked like an idiot, though.
Yeah, it definitely didn't look good.
Like, it did not look great at all.
No.
So, I guess I can see that. You have to have some people that are likable, I suppose. But I don't know. She's a mess of a Survivor player.
Well, my 14, I have Carl. And that might be high because you see him like breaking down in this preview. But I do think that if the other side is going to go for somebody, it's going to be B. And I mean, the only thing I'm worried about is with the weather and all of that, is there spoilers of quits this season? Cause I have no idea, but if there's a quit, I was trying to say like, maybe it was Jessica who was going to quit, but with like Carl, like crying and how rough he had of a time in that first episode. And then his best friend goes home and then Jessica goes home and he gets completely blindsided. And now he's talking about how this is the hardest game. And if it's just raining on him, like, I don't think Carl, somebody would quit because he's so into the game, but what if he did, you know?
Yeah, I mean, I don't think he's going to, but...
Yeah, so yeah, I put him at 14 because I don't think he will, but what if he does?
Okay, yeah, I mean, I have him at 16 for the same kind of reason. He's just not in a good spot. He's still doing better than B. But, you know, he's older, so he's not a natural, obvious person to fit in with the rest of the group as much. And then he was totally blindsided.
Totally.
He needs a swap as bad as anybody.
Mm-hmm.
Really. I mean, because I think there are people on the Goliath tribe that he could do a lot better with. You know, and he would have a real shot to where, because they feel a little older, even if they're very broken down along the popular kids and not popular kids line, much more so than the David tribe feels like. It's still an older popular group.
Yeah.
It's not puppies, you know, because the David tribe feels really, really young. For some reason. Just, I mean, it really feels like kids.
It does. And I think it's because we're supposed to be seeing them as like underdogs who, you know, whenever it's an underdog, you always try to make them seem more like bumbling than they are, which is childlike, you know? So, you know, and plus it's Christian's confessionals all the time, which
oh my goodness.
You know, it doesn't get
so more animated.
Yeah. Kiddie than that. I could see Carl going home. I mean, my 15 is Natalia. My 16 is Lyrsa. So I have Natalia that low.
Okay.
Because of, like, I was pretty much saying, if they do decide, she's the one who's been most vocal against Natalie. So if they do decide, hey, we're going to vote off, so if we can get the numbers and we got to get somebody, and Dan has an idol, well, he's friends with Natalia, who's been, like, yelling at me the entire time. Natalie may be able to pull that. I don't know if she's going to be able to. But that's why I put her that low. And then Lyrsa, like I said, I'm just not convinced until that tribe wins. They win one challenge and I'm like, you know what, Lyrsa can jump way up in my rankings because then they've won and then they don't really have to worry about strength so much. But as long as her name is going to be coming up during strength conversations, I think she could always be in danger.
Yeah, no, I don't think she's entirely out of the woods. I think it's just as likely that Lyrsa goes home next week as she makes top five.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I just could end up anywhere. I just like her a little bit more.
All right. And then who do you have? So who's your 15? Who you got between Allison and Carl?
Okay. So I have Allison, then I have Mike at 15, then I have Carl at 16, and then I have B at 17, which puts Natalie at 18.
Yeah. So we just flip-flopped on B and Natalie here. I have Natalie at 17, B at 18.
Okay. Yeah. No, I mean, I think it's a toss-up. I think B is the natural one to go. If the Davids go to tribal, and I don't see any way, unless there's some weird idol play going on, but I almost feel like they've made it so clear that Natalie is so crazy that she is, and just an easy one to get rid of, and Dan will save his idol.
Yeah.
I can totally see him being like, we're not even worried. Let's just, now that might backfire, but I don't know who's going to not vote for Natalie is kind of the problem. And I mean, even if you're winning, it just gets exhausting. You know, and I don't know, Natalie has, it seems like on social media, she suggested a little bit that like people like her more than it's looking like on TV, which I don't doubt at all. That happens a lot. You know, for the most part, I think everyone generally likes everybody else or doesn't think they're completely awful. And so it's still though, if she's being as bad as she is coming across on the episode, it's just like, it's way too early to have to play with that person. Right. Even though it's like good strategy. Yeah. If nobody likes Natalie, will Natalie ever win this game? No, she absolutely won't. But if she's that annoying from day one and she does make it to the end, there's an argument to be made. They're like, hey, I was obnoxious and you people just didn't vote me off. Like, what did I have to do? The only thing I had to do was just drive you guys crazy and you kept me around. Like, this is ridiculous.
Yeah.
And I got to contribute to the game in X, Y, and Z way. And so it's just, I don't know. It's,
I think that's fair. I mean, and it yeah. seems like she's trying to make those arguments. Like, she's trying to use yeah. her weakness and say, and make everybody see her weakness, but she's really using it as her strength. You know, everything that she was saying about, I'm the 60-year-old, I'm the most out of shape, I'm the oldest, what, why would I ever be the biggest threat? I think she's really trying to push that on people. And I could see her getting to the end and also trying to push, I was the most obnoxious and you were all fools and let me get here. And yeah. what I keep saying about Natalie is she's on the stronger tribe. So just as long as she keeps on going.
Yeah. She could be an RC if we don't get a swap.
Absolutely. But the thing is, if we don't get a swap, is she really going to be an RC? Because RC goes right at the merge. Natalie's not going to go at the merge.
No, if you put up with Natalie to the merch, you're going to put up with Natalie the rest of the way.
Yeah, like, because at that point, it's, I'll take you to the end and sit down next to me.
Yeah. Oh, man, and she's amazing TV, too.
Yeah.
I'm loving Natalie. She's fantastic. I would love to meet Natalie in real life. She lives a few miles from me. I have not met her yet, but she seems, like, hilarious.
Yeah.
I mean, it's great. I'm ready for her to start burning stuff at camp.
I just can't lose her because she's on my fantasy team, and that would mean I lost the first three people. My whole team would be cut in half three episodes in. That just can't happen. Come on, Natalie.
Oh, that's really funny. Yeah, well, I mean, I guess I have, you know, B in whatever, the penultimate Alex. Spot. And she's on my team. So,
yeah,
you know, I hope we don't lose her for that reason. But, oh, man, she is like watching paint dry. I mean, that's the hard part, right? B's also not a fan of Survivor. She was a recruit. Mm-hmm. She got on the show, and now she's boring as can be. Dan is not a fan of the show, got on the show, and he's fascinating and super interesting to watch. So it doesn't work all the time. And I feel like there's a difference between recruits. If I, mm-hmm. you know, can complain about casting for half a second, it's just like, there's a difference between recruits. Stephen Fishback is a recruit. And I think generally people love watching him on the show.
He's one of the best,
ever. You know, and then you have people that have applied and that don't pan out. I mean, there are people in every category that are better than they expect, what they expect, and worse than they expect. And the hard part with B is it's just, I'm very curious as to what she was like what got her on this show, because it's just boring. And then I also have her ranked low just because it's like a Brendan level. I blew the challenge, but I'm going to give you the post game pep talk of like, if I had one more second, I would have won. And it's like, dude, you didn't. And same with B. It's like, yeah, it doesn't make anyone feel better. It just reminds them that you sucked so bad and drives people crazy. But that's just me personally.
Yeah, no. And I hear what you're saying. I mean, I think with B, what might have actually gotten her cast was, hey, an MMA fighter on the David tribe. Oh, boy. You know, like, I really think that could have just been as simple as that.
Okay, but at the same time, how is she on the David tribe and Alec is on the Goliath tribe?
Because they needed equal men and equal women.
Well, no, I know that. But like, and I don't dislike the theme. I kind of actually like it. It sounds really cheesy, but it's kind of fun in practice. But to make it, to talk about like, these are people that are successful, that have had the way paved for them. It's like, dude is slumming it in Orange County as a surf bum.
Yeah.
And B has like fought from the very beginning and has become tremendously successful, which I don't know.
Well, and that's what somebody was saying. It's like, is this David versus Goliath, or is this privilege versus not privilege? Like, cause that's pretty much what it's coming down to. Like, you're yeah. saying, you know, you're not making it underdog versus Titan. You're making it privileged versus not privileged. Like, David became a king or whatever it was. But like, some of these people have already become, like when Nick said he became a king, some of these people have already become kings. Some of these people have already done it. Like, B is somebody who I think has already achieved what she wants to achieve. And Nick has achieved a lot of what he wants to achieve. Like, these yeah. are people who have done it. So, yeah, I mean, even Christian, obviously he's going to be on the David tribe, but here's a guy who's like incredibly successful at what he's doing.
Yeah, incredibly successful. He's a professor, yeah. and I don't think he's that much older than me, really. I mean, he's a professor. Then you have Gabby, who I know is fairly well off. You know, you've got Davey, same kind of thing. He had a really good job with the CDC before the show. Yeah, it just feels a little funny. It's definitely, I totally agree with you. It's privilege versus not privilege. It's like privileged attitude versus not privileged
yeah.
attitude.
Yeah.
I love the division either way. It just, some of that makes you question when Jeff is trying to sell it. And it's like, okay.
Yeah, and I could see where Allison's coming from when she says what she's saying, because she might be like, well, if you're giving me this theme of David versus Goliath, and maybe some other people had told their stories before Allison even spoke,
yeah.
And she hears B be like, oh, I came from this, and now I'm a successful MMA fighter. Allison might be like, well, I wasn't born a doctor.
Yeah.
You know what I mean?
No. And it's terribly tough. I can only imagine how hard medical school is. Law school is excruciatingly awful, and I would assume medical school is worse. And so I totally get that. What I think Allison was actually trying to do, and this is, I have not read or listened to the first one out where they talk about how what Allison said was worse. Mm-hmm. But what it hit me that she was trying to do was she was trying to lower herself to make herself look more like a David to the Davids, so that they hated the other Goliaths, but when it came time to swap or came time to merge and she had to work with these people, that they didn't think she was on such a pedestal. She wanted to be like, hey, I've had to work for what I've gotten to. It just was a little tone deaf. It's kind of like my complaining about the beach, trying to be like, yo, this isn't fair. And then no wonder you guys have been losing. It's not because you suck. Mm-hmm. You did, but like, it's not because you suck. It's because it's not fair and it's not your fault. And then it doesn't come across that way at all. It just comes across as complaining and obnoxious. Yeah. And I think that's exactly what she was trying to do. She was being like, yo, I see myself as a David. I've fought for everything I've had. And then Jeff's just like, yo, your parents are doctors. You're a doctor. Let's talk to Pat, who's had to scrabble his whole life at, you know, and has just barely above the, you know, the water. And he's had to fight to get there.
And that's a great point. And I totally agree with you. I just think Allison, and I defended Allison on the first episode, because when you find out that you're on the Davids or you're on the Goliath, you automatically know how that means you're now going to be perceived the rest of the game. If you're on the Goliath tribe, I honestly think it's harder for a Goliath to win the game. It just because you're on the Goliath tribe, it is now harder because people are going to look at you and say, oh, well, you've had it easy or you've whatever. So I understand why she was trying to do that. Like, because at that point, you just stepped on, you haven't even gotten to the beach yet. You're on the boat. And they're already telling you, well, you're on the bad guy tribe. Of course you're going to get defensive. You're like, wait a second. Like, what's going on here? And some people can just own it. Like John seems like he's like, yeah, I'm ready. But, you know, what did you, I wanted to ask you this because you've played Survivor.
Okay.
Yeah. You've done challenges.
Yep.
What did you think about the selections that the David tribe made in that first challenge?
Well, first of all, I think it was probably a guess for the first two stages, but the puzzle was, I mean, anybody that knows how to do a puzzle is going to give the other person the cube puzzle and you're going to do the slide puzzle. I mean, I can't even really tell you what an algorithm is very technically, but I can tell you that I could have solved that slide puzzle in 20 seconds. I mean, that's the easiest puzzle to sit at your job or in class or whatever, when you know you're going on the show and do slide puzzles. I can do like a 10 by 10 slide puzzle in 2 minutes, right? It just, there's a method to it. And as soon as you know how to do it, you're great. And so that's what it was going to come down to. And I would imagine that's exactly what Christian said. He was like, there's no way we're not going to do the slide puzzle. Those cube puzzles take a long time. A lot longer than a slide puzzle. Yeah. It's just not as simple, by any means. And so I think they were smart to not pick the one with the boards moving. Lyrsa and Christian were. I think that was the hardest one. It's possible they picked the most dangerous one for them to do, going over the side. Because what happens if you fall off? Then you're just done.
I know. That's what I was thinking.
Ladder.
And the other one was easy. The other one is one where you're just holding a rope in between you and you just shimmy across.
Yeah.
That's so much easier because if you start to tip, you have another person who's holding you balanced.
Which, to be fair, those two don't look that athletic.
True.
I mean, I don't know if I would do a very good job at it, so I'm not. But it just looks like there's more room if you don't have really good balance and you're not super athletic. There's just like I don't know. It's like some people can go into the gym or whatever, and they're like very natural with all of the gym equipment. Mm-hmm. And then there's the rest of us who go into the gym, and it's like, and like no matter how many times I go, like the trainer is still like, do this, and she'll say the same thing every time. And it's like, well, I could just put you on a tape in my earphones, and then I don't need you. But it's like you still make the mistake every time, just because it's you're just not as coordinated, I guess, maybe. And so I can see them. Maybe that's why they didn't pick it. But yeah, I think there was probably no doubt about the slide puzzle.
Yeah. Well, the one that I was going to say is the middle one is the one where I think they just like, what were they thinking? Where they decided to go on the crawl under.
Oh, yeah.
And you know what I mean?
That's hard to know, right? I mean, they haven't encountered a survivor net before. And yeah, they're kind of gnarly to where you would rather climb over it rather than under it.
Yeah, absolutely. They're heavy
and they're kind of stiff. And I mean, it's the same exact net that you like jump over as you go down those ramps and all those challenges. And so it's just, it's, you know, the first time you encounter the survivor net, after that, you're like, yeah, I'm not picking that.
Yeah.
You know, you would never choose to crawl under that. It's like, I'm sure they were all just scratched up and it was hard to get under it. Yeah. Where, you know, crawl through a tube where you're not actually having to, you know.
I like to look at the hypothetical here of, if one of them fell off, so then the Goliaths had a lead. Then they did the crawl under, and the Goliaths had what I think was the easiest one. They literally just climbed through a net, like a tube.
Yeah.
So if the Goliaths would have gotten to that cube puzzle a couple, like a minute or two before them, could there have been a chance? You know what I mean? Like, it's just one of those. I think they might have picked the two hardest things to do. And I get the floor, the board one, I agree with you. But they might have picked the most dangerous and then the hardest. Yeah. And they really could have ended up hurting themselves there. And I don't know if it's just because, like, I've watched the show so much. But anytime I would see a crawl under, I would say, nope, never doing that. Like, there's no way. And I – just because I've seen anything with, like, nets and ropes in Survivor, like, I want nothing to do with. To be honest, like, I want nothing to do with it.
It's honestly, I think, the most dangerous part of Survivor. I mean, maybe I'm being dramatic here, but like with the rope, when you, anytime you have to pull it or hold on to the rope, it just tears your hands and everything it comes in contact with apart for some reason. But I think that opening challenge is the perfect example of a Survivor challenge. It all comes down to the puzzle, and that's how it is. And I would assume at this point that's what they want it to come down to, because they know. I do have to say, I watched a bit of this season of Australian Survivor, and it was the first I'd seen from it, and some of the challenges were really fascinating. I mean, as somebody that's pretty good at a puzzle, I love the puzzle aspect of Survivor from a contestant standpoint, because I think it puts me at an advantage. But in terms of viewing entertainment, how many more times can we go see it come down to a puzzle where the first part is irrelevant? So there are definitely some cool stuff they've been doing.
And I think what the challenge people have gotten to the point of is the puzzles are now too complicated. And a complicated puzzle isn't more interesting than a non-complicated puzzle. I'd rather watch
Especially a puzzle.
That's what I mean. I'd rather watch a puzzle that takes 5 minutes than a puzzle that takes an hour, because all you're going to show us of it anyway is 15 seconds. You're just going to show us the beginning and the end. That's all you're going to show. So if that's all you're going to do, I don't want it to be an hour puzzle where I'm like, I can't tell who's in the lead or who's behind until Jeff says, oh, the Goliaths are starting to put it together. And then, you know, the Goliaths are going to win. Like, yeah. I want it to be a simple, make it a slide puzzle. Make it so that everybody's doing a slide puzzle. Or I thought, yes.
And it's more dramatic when it's an easy puzzle, because you run up there and let's say you have a 30 seconds behind. You run up, you're like, it's a slide puzzle. You start whipping those pieces around. It makes way more compelling TV. Yeah. Than it does when it's this complicated thing that you have to sit there and think about and fail at for 45 minutes. And I guarantee you, in a lot of those, it's, you look over and you're like, oh, they figured something out. Let me try this. And then you figure the next step out, and that tribe looks at you, and then they get the second part. You know, it just bounces back and forth, to where I agree with you completely. Let's make them a little bit easier, and let's make the other part of the challenge more compelling.
Yeah,
it's just not. How many times are we going to row and go get puzzle pieces, you know?
Yeah, and when Alexa and I did the rewatches of Guatemala and Panama, there's a challenge. I think it was in Guatemala where they do like a spider net cargo thing where you have to run across the net, jump up onto the ropes, and grab bags. And you're still just grabbing bags, but grabbing the bag and getting it back to you where you started was the challenge. There was no puzzle pieces inside that. That's like one of the most intense challenges, because it literally comes down to the last second. And if you rewatch Guatemala, every challenge in Guatemala came down to the last second. They were all so even. Both tribes were so even. And it was so much fun to watch, because it didn't always end with, all right, now we have to get to this point and we're all going to just do a puzzle, because a puzzle isn't fun to watch for an audience member who's not doing
it. No, but what shocks me is that if you're going to make it all about collecting puzzle pieces and then doing a puzzle, make it so you can drop the puzzle piece and you have to like go back and then go back out to get the puzzle piece. You know, this might be going a bit into the weeds and I only remember it 'cause I was there, but like the challenge where you're blindfolded and had to do the puzzle with Wendell and Dom and stuff calling, and Des calling the puzzle from Ghost Island, blindfolded, we got the pieces, then we all ran back. Wendell's team left their one bag of puzzle pieces way back at the thing. And instead of making the whole tribe blindfolded, follow Wendell back through the obstacles, get the piece and go back, they let Wendell unblindfolded just run back and get the puzzle pieces. It's not about getting the puzzle pieces.
Yeah.
It's about the puzzle. And that's just like a perfect example of like, why not make it about the puzzle pieces a little bit more and make the puzzle a little easier?
Yeah, because I mean, some of the best challenges are from earlier seasons. Like, I really believe that most of the best challenges are from earlier seasons. Yes, you've gotten to a point now where everybody's at the same point at the same time, which is what you want, because you want it to be, oh, it could be anybody, and you're sitting there not knowing. But we all kind of know. Like, you still knew that Goliath was probably going to pull that puzzle out because you could see that David was making zero progress.
Yeah, which is pretty bad. If it did take an hour.
Yeah.
I mean, come on, Christian. And Gabby's good at puzzles, too. It's like, really? Really?
I know.
I should have made some more progress than that. But it's all, yeah, it's hard to know what actually was going down in that, you know.
Yeah.
It also could be, maybe the challenge did take an hour, but it's entirely possible they were so terrible at rowing that boat, and it was edited to look like they weren't that far behind.
Mm-hmm.
And it's possible, you know, the other tribe had a 20-minute head start.
Yeah.
Doing the puzzle. Who knows? You know, that's what's kind of tricky about it. But
yeah, it's no, fine. Yeah, I'm just glad. I like talking about it with somebody who's actually done them before, because I wonder, like, even like when the dream team is testing these challenges, like, what is the dream team like? So, like, these producers have to know what's coming at this point, right? Like, they just like, they know what to expect from everybody.
Yeah, I mean, I think that's a question for Will, but they have to assume what's going to happen. I mean, it was funny. There were a couple instances where we would pick who was going to do what for a challenge, and then Jeff would come over and we'd tell him who was doing what part of it and who was doing the puzzle, and he'd be like, that's not who we thought was going to do it.
Mm-hmm.
And you're like, oh, so you think we're going to lose, or you just think we're robots that you can guess exactly what we're going to do because we've done 20 hours of psych testing? it's all just fascinating. I have to say, like, the coolest part now that I'm like through the experience and I'm so excited just to be a fan again. I mean, it was incredible to play, but the whole TV part and the internet hate and whatever is just obnoxious. It's fun to be a fan again. Playing the game is like, watching it is cool. Playing the game is so incredible.
Yeah. Yeah. I'm jealous of anybody who got to do that.
Yeah. So this is my plug, apply. We're still, anybody that wants to, you never know, put in a video. I didn't think I'd make it. And then I got a call right away. So, you never know.
Yeah. Well, there you go. That's a good way to end it. So now we've done predictions, power rankings, and Bradley's wise words. So anybody who thought Bradley was a dick, there you go. He just said, apply, follow your dreams. That's not a bad guy.
There we go.
Everybody always says, I gave you too much credit all of last season. So, you know, I got to.
Well, I mean, I will say, and I've heard it a few times, so I mean, it's the same kind of thing. A lot of people that have hung out with me will say different than what people that just see it on TV.
Yeah.
You know, I mean, I think it's a lot of what Natalie's doing. I guarantee you she's more self-aware than she looks like on TV.
Mm-hmm.
And I guarantee you she's doing it to make a good television to a degree. She knows what the producers want. I knew going out there, that's exactly what the producers wanted me to do. You know, I was not going to get the underdog at it. Sorry, it just wasn't going to happen. And so you kind of have to play the hand you're dealt. And then you're also on the show. And if you're a big fan of the show, you also want it to be as good as possible. So if going out there and, you know, are there aspects of my personality that are miserable and terrible? Yeah, absolutely. Go play those up and play down the part where you're like, sure, I can talk to anybody. And it makes better TV. So, you know, go for it. Go have fun with it. Apply, and maybe you two can be the villain or just be hated on.
There you go.
Wear like a badge of pride.
Yeah, exactly. Exactly. Then, yeah, all those internet trolls who are ripping on Bradley, you can get on the show and you can become the person who's being ripped on. So,
I'll tell you, it's really fun. It gets a little tough there in the middle where you're like down in the trenches and everyone hates you. But then you emerge from that and you're like, you know, you got to be a villain on reality TV. It's the coolest thing ever.
Yeah, exactly.
And be on Survivor.
Exactly. That's the best part. But
and then you can keep being the villain when you go back to your real life and no one else does. They all ruin their life because they want attention like they used to get on when they were on the show. And it's like, I see you.
That's amazing.
Yeah.
That's amazing. So. Yeah, well, like you said, you wanted to be the villain without being absolutely mean to anybody, right? Isn't that what you said to me at one point? You said you were the villain on that show without being mean to anybody in the edit.
Yeah.
Until the Donathan thing happened. But until then, it was
I don't know, it's all an edit, and I don't Donathan's a lovely person, but you know, you just have to know you're watching an edited TV show.
Yeah.
And that's the hard part about being mean to them now. I thought it'd be way easier to be mean. So it's like, oh, this is an edited character and I can, you know, just make fun of the characters. But then you're like, wait, is this person really awful? Or do they know they're being awful? Or like, it takes someone like Angelina, right? If she's in, like, knows what she's doing and knows she's coming across terribly and is playing that up to be miserable for our entertainment, then I'm all on board and I think she's incredible. But if she's really that clueless and that miserable in real life and doesn't understand it, then it's like, I don't have any time for that.
There you go. Yeah, so that's the difference, and that's why it makes it hard, and that's why at least you look at that. Alexa and I try to look at that too. We don't want to make it personal. Everybody else wants to make it personal. So
yeah, don't make it. Yeah, I don't know. It's all fun though. It's a good time.
All right. Well, anyway, we'll wrap it up there. We had a great ending note, and then that went away. But that's cool. we'll wrap it up there. Bradley, thanks for joining. To everybody else. This is always Alexa's part, so I always blow this. But follow us on Twitter at Survivor Specialist. Follow us on Facebook. Keep subscribing on YouTube. Tell all your friends, even if they don't like Survivor or us, just tell them to subscribe because it makes us look better. Go on iTunes, give us a rating, whatever you want to do. Subscribe to us over on iTunes too. And I will be back Wednesday. I think Alexa might be able to do Wednesday. We just have to root for the Braves to not go to game 5, I believe. I think that's the only thing we need to not have happen. But that also might be a lie, and I might have just lied to all of you. So keep an eye out. It could be Alexa. It could be somebody else who I won't say who it is, but it's not a famous Survivor person. It's just somebody who you've heard about. Anyway, Bradley, thanks a lot for coming on again.
Yeah, thanks for having me, Phil.
Yeah, man. No problem.
It was fun.